Hold just a second.
Welcome everyone back to the FPL Banger Show. My name is Siva. I'm joined by my friend Sam, and we have our first. We normally record these episodes by ourselves, but we've got our first ever guest, Champions League winner, FA Cup winner, Ligue 1 winner, Liverpool legend, John Anarisa. John, how are you doing?
Morning. I'm good. Apart from the weather outside, it's rainy and windy and cold. Apart from that, I'm good.
John, we're speaking to you in conjunction with the Battle of the Reds, Liverpool legends against Man United legends in Kuala Lumpur on the 27th of April. Now, how much are you looking forward to coming down to Kuala Lumpur? Have you been here before? How much are you looking forward to our beautiful weather, which is mostly sun, lots of sun, and then more sun on top of that?
I'm always looking forward to go to Kuala Lumpur. I've been there a few times already. I'm looking forward to the game. I'm looking forward to meeting the people and the fans. I'm also looking forward to the weather, even though for us Norwegians and gingers, it's going to be hot and humid and quite warm. But yeah, I can't wait to come back and have a good time there and enjoy the game.
John, of course, when we speak about Man United, I mean, John Anarisa's career is basically one highlight reel of your moments against Man United. You made your Liverpool debut in the Community Shield at Cardiff against United, where you won. And I mean, the famous John Anarisa trademark free kick goal against Man United, your first, I think, Premier League game against them in a 3-1 victory you scored. I mean, can you take us back to that moment? Because I was reading up for this and I realized you just joined from Monaco. You were young, probably one of your biggest games in your career at that time.
Yeah.
What's the feeling like that, scoring such a big goal in such a big game?
You know, it's always those games you're looking forward to. I didn't know what to expect because for me, it was different thing. It was Liverpool against Man United, which is the biggest game in Norway as well because of the fan base. Mm. It was Riise against Solskjaer, you know, it's, you know, the big rival there as well. And I actually made an interview with Norwegian press the day before, and on the game day in the English press, they translated my interview and they made it like, "I'll break Beckham's legs," which was not my intention in Norwegian media. But when you translate it, you know, they put some other words in. So the pressure was on in that game, you know, because I was looking forward to playing as Beckham because he was a big idol of mine. So, but you know, big name, big players always do big things in big games, you know. And for me, it was a young player, first game. And that free kick basically made me, you know, made my name in European football, made my name in our fans. You know, they could see what I could do. And it made life a lot easier for me to crack on from there. Because when you score that goal, you know, yes, you get more pressure. But at the same time, you prove to people that you deserve to be there and you were good enough. So, and also winning as Man United and also winning as Solskjaer was, you know, a big bonus as well.
I mean, John, I was reading your biography, Running Man, which is an amazing book. And I think anyone who hasn't picked it up should definitely check it out. And you mentioned Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a few times there. And it surprised me that I realized you're Norway's most capped player of all time. And often people think about Norway, they think about Ole Gunnar. Do you feel, I mean, would you agree with us? You know, we would think you're the best Norwegian player of all time. Would you feel that? Would you confidently say that even now?
Well, now we got Haaland and Martin Ødegaard coming through, but I think what you have to understand is in Norway, it's like people want you to be a certain person. You know that you're not allowed to put your head out. You're not allowed to be different. You're not allowed to do certain things that it's not the Norwegian way. And I'm kind of that person who likes to do different things. You know, I go my own way. While Solskjaer is more the typical Norwegian guy. You know, he doesn't say anything wrong. He doesn't do anything bad. He's always that nice, polite guy. So I think he got more credit for that because he was the typical Norwegian guy. Well, I was more the guy who always could say things that people didn't agree on, and I wanted to put pressure on myself. So, but my record speaks for itself. What I did, who I played for, the trophies I won, and being able to play more or less every single game in every single club I was in. That record speaks for itself. So for me, football-wise, I agree with you guys. Unless now, because now we got Haaland and Martin Ødegaard coming through, I think that's going to be changing the scenario. But I feel quite okay with my career.
And how do you feel about the new generation of Norwegian players? You mentioned Haaland, Odegaard. How do you feel about the Norwegian team moving forward with this new golden generation, maybe?
I mean, we have to. We have a lot of good Norwegian players. You know, we have Oscar Bob at Man City as well, who is doing quite well and getting chances. And you have Sørloth in Spain, who is doing well. So we have good players, great players doing well. But then I think the hardest part in football is making that last big step, you know, like Haaland and Ødegaard is doing now in Arsenal and Man City. It's always, we have good players, but to make that last big step at the moment is Ødegaard and Haaland. And so it's for those players who are really good to making that last step is always the hardest part to be recognized as great players. And I think that's a little bit issue in Norwegian football at the moment. We have those two and then loads of good ones, but for them to make the really big step is always the hardest. So for us now, we have a great national team, but we're still missing more players who make that last step to be really good. So I'm excited for Norwegian football, and I think Haaland and Ødegaard is helping us to put the eyes on the Norwegian football, but it's up to the rest of the players to make that last final step now.
And John, of course, I mean, in your experience, right, you went on to play in, I mean, apart from England and Italy, you went on to India and so on. So you've been to Asia, you've seen Asian football. I mean, we're speaking to you from Malaysia. We're a country of about almost 30 million people. Norway is a country of 5 million. And you've produced, I mean, multiple world-class players, yourself, Solskjaer, Haaland, Odegaard. I mean, even going back to Iversen, Morten Gamst-Pedersen. I mean, so many good players. What's the secret? I mean, how does a country that's that small produce so many top players?
You know, I get asked this question every time I'm going to Asia. I get asked this question: what can we do to make good players? And it's—I don't think it's an easy answer, but for me, it's more. It starts with, you know, giving the young players the right information, what it takes to be a professional football player. You have to have the right coaches from the young age, you know, not only from the grown-up ages. You need to start lower with proper coaches to learn them the right way. And at the same time, at the first division, you have to have great coaches. And also, you have to give the young kids the right material to be able to do these things. You know, that goes to pitches, stuff around the right coaches and facilities to be able to do that. So it's not only for the older players to do it. You need to start for lower age and then have the patience, because it takes time. But I would start from bringing coaches in from Europe or wherever, even from the lower age, and start building like academies and stuff with the proper coaches and start building from there. I think that's the right way to do it, and have patience, because you can't make Premier League players in a year or two. You need more time. But I think that's a good first step to get the coaches who've done it before and knows what it takes to be able to be great, and also building the right academies to do the right things.
And of course, I mean, coming back to how your career started, right? You were in Norway. I think you're in the second division. You get picked up by Monaco. And I was reading your book, and you talked about how intimidating it was. Day one, you go in, Fabian Barthez, Javi Trezeguet, Thierry Henry. I mean, how does... Because we see so many young players are written off so early, right? How does someone like you, a teenager coming from Norway, you're going into that kind of dressing room, how do you even begin to mentally prepare for that sort of challenge?
I don't think you never prepare at that age to what's coming. But I was so focused on proving I was good enough. I have respect, but at the same time, I don't have respect, because we all want the same thing. We want to play, you know? So if you go to a club being shy, holding back, not being yourself, then it's hard to really produce the football you know you can. And then in professional football, you don't get many chances, you know? And if you go to a big club like Monaco, doesn't matter your age, and you're shy and you don't show yourself, the coach will think he doesn't have it and they find another one. And that's the thing with top football, that there's so many players in the world that wants that chance. And if you're not showing almost straight away you're good enough, they find another one and another one and another one. So you need to prove yourself from the start, go. And my biggest strength is the mental strength. You know, you see so many footballers, they have the technique, they have the passion, they're good enough with the football and have the skills, but they don't have the mental strength to produce when they need to. They can't handle the pressure, being alone from your parents and your family, you know, all these things. If you can't handle that mentally, you can't perform. And then it doesn't matter how good you are in football, if you're not happy outside football, you don't perform at your best. So for me, I just went in and thought, you know what, I have nothing to lose, just go for it, and then whatever happens, happens.
And do you think it's harder for younger players these days, right? You look at the amount of attention that's focused on their off-field activities and so on. You know, Marcus Rashford, for example, just as an example, right? Gets a lot of flack for just going out for a dinner, a night out and stuff like that. I mean, is it much harder being a young player now than it was back in your day, you think?
I think because of all the social media, it's harder, you know? When I played, we didn't have the Snapchat, Instagram, and all that kind of stuff. And now it's all these podcasters and all these people, commenting everything you do. So it's really, we only focus on football and we didn't get that much of our performance. We only read the papers and you can see, oh, you got rating 4 out of 10 or whatever. Now it's like, it's debates, it's before the game, it's during the game, it's after the game, it's all these forums and all these comments. So I think young kids now they see too much of the negativity, they get told, and then I think that makes people struggle a little bit, you know, because they get affected mentally by all the critics or whatever, and they start thinking about it, and then you can't perform. So yes, I do think it's harder for younger players now in that sense, but at the same time, the young kids have it a lot easier now than before. Because before you were left by yourself, they didn't have all these artificial pitches. You didn't have all these academies at the same time. It's more focused on helping young players now than before. So, the social media doesn't help perform because it's too much focus on people that don't have a clue, but they still comment on everything you do.
So, John, as one of those, two of those people who don't have a clue, we're going to keep you here and ask you more questions. But let's move, sticking to football, right? I mean, we've got John Anarisa on the pod. We can't not ask you about 2005, that night in Istanbul, right? I hope you don't get tired about, speaking about it. But can you take us back to that dressing room? Because, some of us, we've got younger listeners may not know, right? 3-0 down at halftime. And today you speak about AC Milan and people probably don't rate them as much as they used to. But that Milan team, one of the best teams, right? Dida, Nesta, Maldini. Yeah. What's the feeling going into the dressing room? 3-0 down at halftime.
Well, I never get tired of talking about the best night of my life. You know, it's the biggest trophy you can win. So, but I mean, going at halftime 3-0 down, you know, all you want to do is properly go home, you know, because it's really hard to focus on thinking, we're playing as the best defensive team in the world at the moment. You know, AC Milan was the best defensive team in the world, and you're supposed to score 3 goals in a half. You don't really have that belief, do you? And then you've been trashed 3-0 in one half the other way. So, but we were obviously down, we were sad, we were, we're upset because of the performance, and you're waiting your whole life for this game, and we didn't get to our level. But in football, you never know. And the last thing we said in dressing was like, go out there, try to win the second half. And if you get one goal, we all know getting one goal can also always affect the opponents. We know that ourselves. But scoring 3 goals in 6 minutes, we didn't expect that. So, I think we raised that game. And our strength in that team, yes, we had Steven Gerrard, who was individually, brilliant. But we were a team, We won and came to the final because of the team performance. You know, we had like a compact team. And we proved that in the second half and the injury time and also in the penalties that at the end of the day, the team to the togetherness was the one of the game. But I have to tell you honestly, I was in the dressing room thinking, I want to go home, you know, because you don't want to lose 4, 5, 6, 7 in the Champions League final. You know, that's nothing what you need to do. So it was the best night of my life. I'm sure it's the best final in the history of Champions League as well. Because you have to remember, I was standing in the tunnel before the game thinking, okay, I'm from a small town in Norway. And next to me in the line is Cafu, Maldini, you know, Kaká, all these players. And I'm thinking, what am I doing here? It doesn't add up for me to stand next to these people. But so that's the thing, that you're so shocked by yourself that I'm here now. Just enjoy it. I didn't enjoy first half, but I enjoyed the end.
By the way, speaking of hairy situations, Sam, you know, support for this week's episode is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. And they were kind enough to send us... What is this, Sam?
This is the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, which contains a crop preserver, which is, you know, ball deodorant, a crop soother, which is ball aftershave lotion, the weed whacker, which is an electric nose hair trimmer, which gets useful the older you get, and lastly, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, big name, which is a groin and body hair trimmer. So it's a fifth generation trimmer, you know, 5.0. There's two interchangeable blades, next gen skin safe blade heads, a standard one, and also a fall blade for, you know, if you want to get closer. What's cool is they have LED spotlight. I don't know if you can see it in the video. No? The light coming? Yeah, light.
Okay, I think they can hear it, Sam. But yeah, and the LED spotlights, you know, so while you're in the shower thinking about your next big FPL transfer, you know, lights up to illuminate, you know, your choices. Waterproof as well. Yeah, I didn't mention that, right? So shave in the shower. I mean, I make my best FPL decisions in the shower. I can only imagine this is just gonna...
And now you can multitask, Siva.
You can multitask. You can iron out any thorny issues that you have while thinking about your team. Cut the weeds, right? And keep the flowers. That's what I do with my FPL team. So, yeah. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FPLBANGER. That's FPLBANGER. B-A-N-G-E-R.
I think they can spell. So, yeah.
I mean, FPL managers, mate, you can't overestimate us. So go to manscaped.com, 20% off plus free shipping with the code FPLBANGER. And show, you know, you're going to take big risks in life. You're going to make big decisions. You need balls. And, you know, your balls should be clean. That's what we're here to do for you. I mean, John, you said, you know, you didn't enjoy the first half and you wanted to go home. I got to ask you then, you know, it goes down to penalties, right? You scored the 3 goals in 6 minutes. It's penalties. You're John Anarisa. You step up. How does that penalty shootout go? Does Benitez come and say, you're taking one, John, or do you volunteer? Do you put your hands up?
To be honest, I was so tired in the extra time. I had cramp everywhere. And when the final whistle went and it was going to penalties, I was standing like 10 meters away from Benitez, and he looked at me like straight in the eye, and he just nodded, and I just nodded back, and he wrote my name on. So he didn't really ask. He just looked at me and he nodded like, yeah. And I said, yeah. And then I was taking penalty. And my only regret with that penalty, because obviously Dida saved it, is like 99 of 100 times I smash it, you know, use my power. But for some reason, and because of the cramp, I was scared of getting cramp in my run-up, and I placed it. And that's probably the only regret, that I didn't just smash it like I normally would have done. And I did an FA Cup final penalty shootout the year after. I smashed it past. So, but I'd rather miss than us winning than I scored and us losing the final. So I'll take it.
And I guess, John, you know, shall we ask about one of your former teammates that night?
Yeah, let's go for it. Xavi Alonso. He's doing really, really well. I know there was a lot of talks of him taking over Liverpool next season, but it seems like the latest news that's not happening. But how do you feel about watching him, you know, doing so well as a manager?
I'm not surprised, because he's very, when he played the football as well, he was very tactical. You know, he was always the smart one. You know, he was so calm with the ball. He did right passes. He tried to, he had that manager figure on the pitch as well. So, but doing so well so quickly is a little bit surprised, because you know he's got Bayer Leverkusen, who, well, before the season wasn't favorites to win the league, and now they're like 16 points ahead of Bayern. So, and the football they're playing and the results they're getting is unbelievable. I think there are 40 games now unbeaten or something. I don't know. I think that, so he's got something into that team, the belief and the tactical and the technical issues that is unbelievable. And the biggest thing for a manager is to get the team believing in what you're doing, you know, and looking at how they play, they believe in it. And they have the respect for Xavi Alonso for his career as well. So I'm not surprised, but I'm very happy and a little bit sad he doesn't get to be the manager of Liverpool at the moment, but I'm sure he will be in a few years' time.
And I guess, John, since he's not going to be the manager, Xabi Alonso, and this talk, I think Ruben Amorim is now the favorite from Sporting. Mm. You played under some great managers, Benitez, Julier, yeah. Ranieri. How much of a challenge is it to step up? I mean, you came to the Premier League from France. How much of a challenge is it to step up to the Premier League from, you know, Portugal, or one of the so-called smaller leagues, right? For a manager, especially, how does he come in, command the respect of that dressing room? Will it be too much for him, you know?
I think it depends on where you're going. But now you're actually going to Liverpool, which is one of the biggest clubs in the world. And you're taking over from Klopp, who has done brilliantly as well. So there's obviously going to be extra pressure. But the manager who takes over will know that already, you know. And the guy who Liverpool's going to end up with will have the confidence to go in there and do his own thing and try to make Liverpool stay on track and keep growing as a club. My mostly concern is who is staying of the players when Klopp leaves. That's really my little bit concern, because yeah, the manager comes in, is going to be great, we know that, but is some of the players going to go because Klopp is going? Will they have that little bit of Sir Alex Ferguson kind of thing happening when he quit Man United? Just always these kind of questions, but I'm sure Liverpool's going to get the right manager who's going to be great and have the capacity to take the club forward. But will there be a year or two where we're going to have to regroup the squad because of some players leaving, some players coming? Or are we just going to keep fighting for the title? That's my little bit concern at the moment. But I'm sure the club is got it under control. But some of the fans are asking me as well, will Van Dijk stay? Will Mo Salah stay? You know, all these kind of players. Will Diaz stay? Will Nunez stay? So all these questions are going to be always going to come until the new manager is there and he can confirm who is staying, who is going.
And do you have a wish list of players you would like to see at Liverpool next season?
It all depends on the coach, because of the system the coach is going to come and play. For example, if De Zerbi is coming from Brighton, he will play probably three at the back, you know. So it all depends on who's coming and what kind of system they're going to play. So it's hard for me to say, but first of all, I hope most of the players are staying, who we have. And then, depending on the system, we'll see who we need. But I'm sure the new manager is going to bring in a couple of players. That's for sure.
And John, I guess circling back to, you know, your career and the kind of players you played with, because you didn't just play for Liverpool, of course. We spoke about Liverpool, but you also played for Fulham, right? So looking at the list of guys you played with, Henri, Trezeguet, but then going on to Roma, Totti, Liverpool, you had Gerrard, Carragher. Fulham, you had played with some really interesting players. Moussa Dembele, Dimitar Berbatov, who also will be at the Battle of the Reds, Dimitar Berbatov. I'm interested because obviously nowadays everyone talks about work rate and you got, you know, the forwards need to chase back and track back and all those things. And, you know, we all saw Berbatov and he probably wasn't that guy, but he was so amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean football changed, you know, a little bit. Before you could... Now the only player you can probably have walking around is Messi, you know, because of his skills and stuff. And apart from that, you need 11 players running both ways, you know. Like the fullbacks. Now we have the fullbacks who are sprinting up, creating goals and scoring and also going back. I was that kind of player, but now everybody needs to be that kind of player. So you don't get away with it at the top level without having 11 players fighting, you know. You see everywhere you go now, it doesn't matter. You see Real Madrid, Man City the other day in the Champions League, you know, everybody's tracking back. Doesn't matter who you are, you have to run back. And so that's the new level of football. And so I don't think certain players would have struggled with this kind of intensity. They had to rechange a little bit of their approach to the game. But like you said, Berbatov, unbelievable when it comes to his technique, his touch, his awareness, his skills. But like you said, he wasn't the one who was tracking back that much. That was other people's jobs. But he could do that because that was his type of football at that time. I don't think he would be able to get away with it at this level now, but he could change and do it if he was told, but I'm not so sure.
Best player you ever played with, John? I mean, would Berbatov be up there?
No. I always say Steven Gerrard because of he was so complete. He had everything. But also, one player who was is up there by the best I've ever seen is Moussa Dembele. Mm-hmm. He was a joke. He was in training. You couldn't get the ball off him, you know. I'm surprised that he don't miss, you know, Spurs and full of big clubs and stuff, but he was unbelievable. How he didn't get picked up by the biggest clubs in the world, or maybe didn't want to, I don't know, but if you ask players now who play with him, they always say his name because he was so good in training, so you couldn't get the ball off him, his technique, his vision, he was unbelievable. But for me, Steven Gerrard was at his prime, the most complete player because he could do everything. And obviously you have Totti as well, who had his aura around him and his history. But Steven G was the most complete.
Yeah, I mean, the headline from this interview, John, is going to be John Anarisa says Spurs not a big club.
I think it is a big club, but it's not as big as Man United, Liverpool, Barcelona, Real Madrid, those kind of players. That's what I mean with Moussa Dembele. Because, yeah, Spurs is a massive club, but we all expected Moussa Dembele to even go to even higher. And there's no disrespect to anybody saying it's not a big club, but everybody who is in football know that Madrid, Barcelona, Man United, Liverpool is bigger clubs at the moment. And that's just, for me, the honest truth.
And I guess, I mean, Camp Nou, right? Best stadium you've ever played in? Or does it rank up there? I mean, you're coming to Bukit Jalil, which is decent.
I mean, it's the Camp Nou is so known from when you're young age. You always hear about Barcelona and Camp Nou. And to be able to play there is one thing, you know, to walk up the stairs to see the massive stadium. We have our fans like 100 meters up in the air because we can't even hear them because it's so high up. And then be able to score a winner as well against them was... It doesn't get much bigger because as a young kid, you don't even dream about these things because it's so way ahead that you can't even dream about it. But so I've done a few things that I didn't even think about and dream about as a kid, and I managed to do it, which was for me a proud moment. But one of the most iconic stadiums ever.
Would you say it is your most favorite stadium that you've played in, aside from Anfield, of course, which was your home for many years?
I think so. San Siro is also massive, you know, because of the history. You have Olimpico in Roma, which is, you know, was my home stadium for 3 years. I think night games or Champions League night games at Olimpico was special. With the home fans, and they always made some show every time there's a big game. So Olimpico was immense in the big nights as well. So I think Camp Nou, San Siro, Olimpico, Anfield, I mean, especially night games, you know, there's something special about night games. I've been pretty lucky to be able to play in those stadiums and also score and win games.
Well, you'll be pleased to hear, John, your game in Kuala Lumpur is at night, and we're expecting you to recreate the free kick you know, from 2001 against United. Do you still, does the left foot still work?
It's working, but I'm going to put every effort into shooting and might get a hamstring injury or a groin injury or whatever, but at least I'm going for it. And if I'm off the pitch, it's because I got an injury. But obviously the left foot is going to be there. And if there's a free kick, I'll be up there to have a go. But if it's working, I hope the humidity is going to help me not getting a groin. So we'll see.
And do you have any former teammates that you're really looking forward with reconnecting and playing together again in this match?
Well, all I know is it's going to be a fun week, you know, with the boys, you know. Like, you know, when you know that Jermaine Pennant is coming, you always know it's going to be a laughter. Emil Heskey as well. You always know it's going to be, good quality banter with the boys. So, I look forward to see the boys have some good talk about the past, what happened, what we've done together, and just enjoy, you know. Because these are the games that we look forward to, these trips, because we don't speak that much in normal day life, but we all look forward to these kind of events and games because we can catch up. And it's like we've never been apart because we catch up so quickly. So we're looking forward to it. We are very glad and grateful that we are able to do this. And at the same time, give something back to the fans and everything in Kuala Lumpur.
And I guess, John, as we wrap up, we are an FPL podcast. Do you know what FPL or Fantasy Premier League is?
No.
It's okay if you don't. Yeah, so that's perfectly fine. So it's a fairly nerdy game for people like us who watch every Premier League game and you pick a team based on, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know that. But I've never done it because I would go crazy. with that, because I like to win, and it's just I have some friends who plays that kind of game, and the amount of thinking they do behind everything they do, it's just I would go mad if I have to do it. So I haven't done it, and I'm not going to do it because people are, yeah, you want to join our group because we can have competition and we win against this at the end of the season. It's just gonna take too much time, and I guess you spend a lot of time doing it, don't you?
Yeah. Certainly, we are going mad doing it. That's for sure. But I'm not sure if you are aware, John, but you are considered quite a legend even in FPL. You have two records that stand from the time you were playing up until today. The first one is that you are actually the most expensive defender ever in the game, which is a record shared with John Terry. Not even Trent in his current form has ever reached your heights.
Ah, that's awesome. Thank you.
And the second record that you hold is you are the highest scoring defender in a single week of all time in FPL. Can you guess which match was that from your time at Liverpool?
West Bromwich away.
Yes, that's right.
Two goals and 2 assists.
Yeah, and the clean sheet. And you get bonus points in this game as well if you played really well. So full bonus, clean sheet, 2 goals, 2 assists. You scored 27 points, which is still a record up until this day. No defender has ever scored that much before.
I was quite lucky with Benitez because on the game, I think I was a defender, but he played me more or less always a winger away from home and a left back at home. So I knew that when I came out that people picked me because I could score goals. And a defender scoring goals is always a big thing, I think. So, but those who actually didn't know, and I'm glad that you told me because now this day started very well. Though I can be happy now. And by the way, what shirt are you wearing?
I mean, he's wearing a very awful jersey of a very questionable club. I am wearing the jersey that you should be wearing for this sort of interview, 05 Champions League.
You cannot call me a Man United shirt, interview a Liverpool player. That is just awful.
We're just here to represent the game that's upcoming,
I mean, they told us we had to promote this match, John. So, someone had to wear the United jersey. Neither of us wanted to do it, but, we
are
placed the job.
Are you a United fan?
I am, actually. Yeah. But I still have the utmost respect for you, John, and what you've done in Liverpool.
I knew you would say that.
I mean, that's what FPL does to us, We respect players regardless of allegiances. And
it should be like this. That's why I don't understand fans. I mean, even if you support Man United, Liverpool, or whoever you support, I acknowledge good players and good performances, you know. You should, because that's football. I mean, you don't have to like the team or like the player, but you should say this like, oh, awesome performance. He's a great player, because doesn't matter who he played for, he's a great footballer. And that's what I feel some fans are going too far, because when you're going to pick players, they always pick the teammates, player of their team, because they won't be loyal. But same time, some things I said, yeah, he is better than my player in my team. But, you know, so I think that fans should be more, acknowledge that more, because it doesn't mean you don't like your team. It's just that some players are better, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that, John. Like, I love United, but I think above that, I love football. And just watching football, doesn't matter which team it is. And if you can recognize if a good player is from a rival team, you can say it out loud, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. It's interesting. I just read your biography, and you mentioned one of your best friends while you were playing was Tim Cahill. And I don't think many people would know this. Yeah, I mean, speaking of rival players, because there's a lot of controversy. Even last weekend, Erling Haaland, I think, was swapping shirts with a Crystal Palace defender at halftime. And, you know, you got the usual pundits, how dare he, and how can you do that? And but, I mean, you guys are just professionals, and you're just, you know, you're respecting each other's games, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we are, when the game is on, you know, like for me and Tim Cahill, we were neighbors, you know. We lived next to each other for a long time. And we had... After every weekend, we sat in his house at nighttime. He came home from an away game, or I came home from an away game. We always met in his house, sat watching Sky Sports News late, because we can't sleep after the game. So we sat until 3-4 in the morning after every weekend together, eating loads of crisp and shit, and playing pool, watching football, just talk. And because we respect each other so much, because we are both footballers, we are both professionals, and that's, I think that's a big thing for us, that when the game is on, like, we had massive tackles, me and Tim Cahill, you know, in the game, smashing each other. But say after the game, hugs, kisses, meet up in his house, and have a, you know, that's how it should be.
Right. Before we go, can I get your advice for our listeners who are, you know, who want to know who are the best assets, best players to get from Liverpool? So perhaps you can pick three, the best defender, the best midfielder, and the best forward that you would recommend people to get into their teams.
For the Fantasy League, you're saying?
Yeah, from Liverpool. Because Liverpool actually has a... I don't know how to explain to you, but they have two matches coming up in a single week, which is a big thing in this game. You know, it's like a big advantage to have two matches in 1 week.
John knew about the West Brom game and that being the highest points. I think he knows FPL.
Okay, so if I'm going to pick a defender, I would pick Van Dijk, because I think clean sheet is easy, ECF with him there, and he can also score on set pieces there. So I would pick Van Dijk. Midfield, I would take McAllister. I think he's playing a little bit more forward now, so he always gets a shot in and some assists as well, so he could be a good one. And at the moment, I think Diaz is in good form. You know, he starts creating goals and scoring more goals. He's in good form. So yeah, Diaz or Nunez, I would pick as a striker, because Nunez always creates chaos for an opponent. So, and if he has his day, he will score a few goals. So yeah, I think that would be my pick.
Can we ask you, John, if you don't mind, one last question, but Darwin Nunez, right? Because Darwin Nunez splits opinion, right? There are people who think he's amazing and people who think he shouldn't be allowed near a football team. So, I mean, what do you think as a professional, right? You said he creates chaos. I mean, that's got to be a good thing, right?
I love him. I would have him in any day in my team, because goals will come, but the amount of chaos he causes with his runs, his passion, his pace, you know, his strength... It's hard for defender to handle him, you know, and also a little bit like Haaland. Haaland gets a little bit criticism now because he's general play. But how many defenders are watching Haaland? Two or three. Yeah. So that gives space for other players, you know. So it's a bigger thing than just okay, he might not be involved as much, but he still contributes. And I think Nunez is that kind of player who you know, you can just kick the ball. You know Nunes is going to be there. And I would have, as a defender, a little bit like Suarez, you know. I played against Suarez when I was at Fulham. You don't get a breather. He's always there, pressurizing you, running behind you. You know, he's always there. And that's the hardest thing for a defender to handle. And that's why I think Nunes should be in the team every week if he's on form and if he's injury-free, because he's always going to create chances, free kicks, penalties, and he will score.
I think that's a good way to end. I guess we have to sort of just, you know, we've got to sell this interview, John. So you've got to remind everyone why you were here. So 27th April in Kuala Lumpur, Ballard the Reds. You'll be up against a bunch of United legends, Dwight York,
Teddy Sheringham,
and so on. Anything else, you know, can we, beyond, I'm assuming you'll be demanding to be, you know, captain and on pens since you've... You know,
Well, since it was, you know, I was there to promote the game a couple months ago with Teddy Sheringham. So I think Teddy Sheringham is the captain of United and I'm the captain of Liverpool. And like you said, captains decide. So I'll be on free kicks, penalties, corners, throw-ins, everything there is.
So, we will expect an Olympico goal from you, John. We're looking forward to it.
If I score, I walk off the pitch. Then I've done my job.
All right. We are very, very excited to watch you play, John, in a few days' time. We are going to be there a few weeks' time, actually. Yeah, but we are going to be there, and we hope a lot of our listeners will be there too. Thank you so much for speaking with us. It's been such an honor, such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing you. And when I'm there, come over, say hi, and we can have a chat without that Man United shirt. Take that one.
Definitely, John. Thank you so much.
Thank you. See you.